You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Yatrice Lead, and we are continuing the discussion from yesterday. We've been looking at, in the past week, a series of police killings that are coming now to court or to some other kind of legal resolution. And we are taking a look at the underlying messages here. What are we supposed to interpret by what is happening? What appears to be a concatenation here of cases that somehow will deliver justice. And is it all accidental that these things are happening at the same time? Or is there something else going on? I vote for the latter. Something else is going on. And we are going to be discussing that. Just yesterday, as we started the program, we learned of the U.S. Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, making an announcement that the Justice Department, which she heads, is going to begin a probe of the Chicago Police Department's patterns and practices, especially regarding its police officers' use of force, use of lethal or deadly force, and the racial disparities that may show up in both these areas. The Justice Department's investigation comes, as you know, almost 2 weeks after Officer Jason Van Dyke was indicted on first-degree murder charges for killing Laquan McDonald, 17, in a hail of 16 bullets on October the 20th, 2014, and on the same day that Cook County State's Attorney Anita Alvarez announced that there will be no indictment of Officer George Hernandez, who shot and killed Ronald Johnson, 25, 8 days prior to the McDonald shooting. Before we go any further, it's important to always pay attention to what officials say. And in this case, of course, it's Loretta Lynch, the U.S. Attorney General. This is what she had to say at the news conference yesterday.
Well, good morning, all, and thank you all for being here. I am joined today by Vanita Gupta, head of the department's Civil Rights Division, and Zachary Farden, United States Attorney for the Northern District of Illinois. The Department of Justice is committed to upholding the highest standards of law enforcement throughout the United States. Every American expects and deserves the protection of law enforcement that is effective, that is responsive, that is respectful, and most importantly, constitutional. And each day, thanks to the tireless dedication of men and women who wear the badge, citizens from coast to coast receive just that. But when community members feel that they are not receiving that kind of policing, when they feel ignored, let down, or mistreated by public safety officials, there are profound consequences for the well-being of their communities. There are profound consequences for the rule of law and for the countless law enforcement officers who strive to fulfill their duties with professionalism and integrity. Today, I'm here to announce that the Department of Justice has opened an investigation into whether the Chicago Police Department has engaged in a pattern or practice of violations of the Constitution or federal law. Specifically, we will examine a number of issues related to the Chicago Police Department's use of force, including its use of deadly force, racial, ethnic, and other disparities in its use of force, and its accountability mechanisms, such as its disciplinary actions and its handling of allegations of misconduct. This investigation has been requested by a number of state and local officials and community leaders, but has been opened only after a preliminary review and careful consideration of how the Justice Department can best use our tools and our resources to meet Chicago's needs. In the coming months, this investigation will be conducted by experienced career attorneys from the Civil Rights Division with the assistance of the United States Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Illinois. They will conduct a thorough, impartial, and independent review of the allegations, and the team will meet with a broad cross-section of community members, city officials, and law enforcement command staff and officers to both explain our process and to hear from anyone who wishes to share information relevant to this investigation. We will examine with our experts policies, practices, and data. And at the end of our investigation, we will issue a report of our findings. And if we discover unconstitutional patterns or practices, the Department of Justice will announce them publicly. We will seek a court-enforceable agreement with the Chicago Police Department and work with the city to implement appropriate reforms. Our goal in this investigation, as in all of our pattern or practice investigations, is not to focus on individuals, but to improve systems, to ensure that officers are being provided with the tools that they need, including training, policy guidance, and equipment, to be more effective, to partner with civilians, and to strengthen public safety. And we understand that the same systems that fail community members also fail conscientious officers by creating mistrust between law enforcement and the citizens that we are sworn to serve and protect. This mistrust from members of the community makes it more difficult to gain help with investigations, to encourage the victims and the witnesses of crime to speak up, and to fulfill the most basic responsibilities of public safety officials. And when suspicion and hostility is allowed to fester, it can erupt into unrest. Building trust between law enforcement officers and the communities that we serve is one of my highest priorities as Attorney General. The Department of Justice intends to do everything that we can to foster those bonds and to create safer and fairer communities across the country. And regardless of the ultimate findings of this investigation, we will seek to work with local officials, with residents, and law enforcement officers alike to ensure that the people of Chicago have the world-class police department that they deserve. Thank you so much. And at this time, I'm happy to take a few questions.
Should the investigation expand to include the Cook County State's Attorney's Office?
Well, that was Loretta Lynch, the U.S. Attorney General, making what was widely received as an extremely positive statement, a very affirmative statement, a statement of encouragement, a statement of action, a statement that comes also right on the heels of President Obama's statement about dealing resolutely with terrorism. We discussed that yesterday. But here we have part two, and part two of the same attitude, and that is, it is misdirected attention, and it is in your face at the same time. You know, what this U.S. Attorney General, in effect, has said is nobody should look to the Justice Department for justice. If you think this is about justice, you could cancel that right now. This is not about justice. This is about, and she was very, very, you know, very nicely done, very nicely and smoothly delivered. But what she is saying in the speech, this probe and the investigation that the media keep reporting, and this is why I say you have to always listen. My mother used to say, put your listening ears on. Because if you listen to what the U.S. Attorney General said to the nation, and it's in your face, you can't deny it, she said, don't look to us for any justice. However, the best you can get, the best you could expect is a couple of reforms. See? See how that goes? It's about reforms. She said, if you listened carefully, she said this is not to focus on individuals at all. But it is about improving the systems. Now, I have to stop there for one long minute to tell you how insulting this is. The people are looking to some impartial, some overriding, overarching authority to stop the chaos. And the chaos isn't just about people shooting each other. The chaos has to do with out-of-control rogue cops in some of the country's largest urban areas, largest cities. The chaos involves primarily white police officers shooting, killing, and in other ways taking out of existence people of color, principally African Americans and Latinos, in numbers that are mind-boggling, with alarming regularity. I mentioned two cases that are now at the center of activism in Chicago. Two cases that were just 8 days apart, but strikingly similar. And how many hundreds and thousands of other cases have we talked about and that are known to have existed in the past decades that have not come to justice and proper resolution? Police officers killing people, walking away, and in some cases, walking away with their pensions intact, with paychecks intact, with an alternative lifestyle. You know, they're able to resurrect themselves and go on to other modes of employment without a problem. Nobody is going to jail, really. Nobody is being punished. And this is the issue that one would expect the U.S. Attorney General would be addressing. But she tells you plainly, all dressed up and looking nice and official, in that very smooth official voice, do not look to me for justice. Do not look to my Justice Department for justice. It's not for you. We will do some systemic reforms. Oh, so you are a little troubled that people are dead and you want some answers and you want some justice because the criminal justice system clearly isn't working? Oh, no, well, that's not my concern. She said it very plainly. The focus is not on individuals, when that is exactly where the community wants the focus. It is on individuals. It is on the prosecutors. It is on the judges. It is on the cops. It is on their supervisors. It is on the police superintendent. It is on individuals. Let's get real clear about that. It's on the mayor. She says out front, don't confuse things. I'm here to deal with systems. I'm not dealing with individuals. That's outside of what I aim to do. And then with the kind of patronizing tone that you get from many African Americans who have ascended the rungs of the ladder, she now says rather officiously, just as Barack Obama spoke, very officious, you know. This is about putting in place accountability mechanisms and the handling of what she calls, euphemistically calls, misconduct. misconduct. This is not about investigating rogue cops who are killers. This is about handling misconduct. Very pristine. This is not about subjecting local prosecutors to forensic examination as to how they have handled these cases and the predictable outcomes that we have talked about time and again on this program. It's not about that. It is about the accountability mechanisms for handling misconduct. So immediately, none other than the U.S. Attorney General has reduced murder or equates murder by a police officer as with misconduct. You know, like discourtesy. Like, yeah, you just didn't remember to say good morning before he bashed your head in. Misconduct. This U.S. Attorney General, as was her predecessor, right? We have a problem here. We have a problem. And I confront the African-American community in particular and the progressive community generally about this problem because nobody's saying anything. You have her predecessor, Eric Holder, who should have delivered something other than a report in the matter of the shooting death of Michael Brown. But we got what? We got a report. We got a report. Nobody's gone to jail. Nobody has been made to account for what has gone on for decades in Ferguson. And we have an African American, the first, quote unquote, in that position, with all the power and authority to change things. And what does he say? I'll give you a report. By the way, one of my feet is out of the door. I'm about to exit, but I'll leave you this little report over here. It shows, you know, I did something. And that's what we got. Here comes his successor. Another first. She is the first African-American female U.S. Attorney General coming out of the federal prosecutor's office right there in the Eastern District, based in Brooklyn. Committed, although she faced stiff opposition for her appointment, she nonetheless pulled through. This is her shining hour. And the gift she gives is pablum and pap. Nonsensical and routine responses to a crisis in which she is uniquely situated to create instantaneous change. But she tells the nation, lest she be viewed as something of a different kind, you know, one of those militant Negroes, she sends a signal. You know, you can bet on me. I'm not here to ruffle any feathers. So she talks a talk, but ain't walking the walk. I am not here to look at individuals, she says. I'm here to just, you know, kind of go over the systems that they have that are resulting in all this misconduct. Well, Who has use for a U.S. Attorney General like that? But it really wasn't a departure, when you think about it, from her term as a federal prosecutor in Brooklyn. Cases of police killing and major police wrongdoing occurred on her watch, and we did not see movement in the direction of justice when she was there as a U.S. attorney. Now, as U.S. Attorney General, she is the boss. She is the top law enforcement official. And she has made it plain that she is not about to get into the business of justice. Her Justice Department has nothing to do with justice. She will be issuing a report, she says. And, it will be one of those transparent things, because that's a cute word these days. Everything is transparent. Including, by the way, it should be very much pointed out, what is also transparent is her cowardice. What is transparent is her self-serving subservience to a corrupt political system that feels it owes nothing to the people who are suffering under the yoke of oppression. She feels no particular obligation there. And like many, a political animal, a political figure, self-preservation is the order of the day. She is not about to cause or make any waves. Now, the media is clearly getting the message. This is not a person interested in creating any kind of dramatic changes, like sending somebody to jail. Like taking one of those prosecutors who took more than a year or 2 years, or in the case of, I talked about the case in Miami 4 years ago, as many as 12 police officers fired 116 shots at a young man whose crime was he was just trying to go home after a concert. And they executed that young man, a young Haitian man, in his car. And to this day, no one has been made to answer for that. And yet she is the U.S. Attorney General, with the power to make one phone call and get all kinds of things done in the name of justice, which is what people are asking for and pleading for and in the streets for. They want justice. Look what we got. A careerist interested in self first, and clearly, like going beyond that, self only. We have no use for somebody like that. No use whatsoever. Here's a problem. We're talking here, in so far as she's mentioning systems. Well, I talk all the time about systems, don't I? I tell people, you guys, you have to understand systems theory. You got to understand how systems work. And you have to create your own parallel system to outsmart the system that has been scientifically designed to do you in. I talk about systems all the time. She is saying, I am dedicated to the system, and then throws these platitudes and is talking now in cold words to the community that is looking to her for some kind of respite, some kind of beneficial response. The problem, she says, is that there is mistrust. I like that word. You mistrust the police. And this is about repairing the mistrust that exists. What she's saying is she's talking to white people about black people. The problem here is that the community that is so disproportionately affected are people of color. But we know that. This has been established fact. But she now does what they want her to do, which is she devolves the responsibility back to the community that is being inordinately affected here by police killings and police harassment and police abuse of authority and power and police killings. She says it's mistrust. That is where the focus ought to be. Let's rebuild the trust. Well, I have a different view. I say, thank goodness that there are still people with a working brain who will not automatically trust the people who are trying to take them and their children out. Because if we looked to people like Loretta Lynch, as we did with Eric Holder, for some kind of a sensible response in proportion to the enormity of the problem and the length of time that this problem has existed and with such devastating effect, and it is seen as almost unique to communities of color, African Americans and Latinos predominantly, then what are we to think? When somebody gets up in a position of power, the number one person in law enforcement and in the criminal justice system, affecting the criminal justice system, and says these kinds of silly things. Here's the other problem I have. In no way, shape, form, or fashion does Ms. Lynch intend to look at the prosecutorial and criminal justice elements of this matter of police killings and rogue cops. She says the problem is going to be confined. So she's not going any further than, you know, well, let's look at some reports, let's look at some figures and whatnot, and we'll write a report. They're not doing any forensic investigation. They're not trying to figure out how it is that a police officer could say, well, I experienced a psychotic episode when I put my gun to the head of a 14-year-old Randolph Evans and blew his brains out. And walks away. Or the police officers who shot at Amadou Diallo 41 times, striking him 19 times, killing him at his own house for no reason other than he was just trying to get into his own house. And they all walked and they shopped around and got a judge and moved out of the jurisdiction because Puerto Ricans and African Americans in the Bronx can't be trusted with the responsibility of delivering justice via the court system and the jury system and the trial system. And they all walk. And hundreds of other cases like that that I know personally. She's not interested in looking at the prosecution of these cases. How did the police investigation go of the police? How is it that these young men, young boys in the prime of their lives, got railroaded into prison because the mayor said and Donald Trump said somebody ought to pay for the sexual attack and the physical assault on a woman who was jogging through Central Park? And that means that very casually somebody made a decision that these kids, well, their lives are not going to amount to very much anyway. So let's come up with a bunch of people and say they did it. The prosecutor in that case has gone on to a second career as a college professor of law, earning a very substantial salary and enjoying a very nice profile in the academic and criminal justice communities. She gained quite a bit by railroading people and is walking around as a free woman, no problems. How did that happen? And everybody knows the truth about it. The Justice Department, which should be monitoring these cases, the Justice Department shouldn't have to do any kind of a study now. That was its job. That's why hundreds of millions of dollars are allocated every year. And that's why people who are in her position as U.S. Attorney General earn a very nice salary with great benefits. And so the idea is that they should be making a change, taking on the issues. But now she is telling us, Loretta Lynch is telling us, the problem isn't even beyond the police station house. We're going to look at the figures, and we'll figure out what happened here. And we'll come up with some recommendations. And what are they going to do? What is the stiffest fine and penalty that she's contemplating imposing? She says it. I mean, if you had listened, this is what she said. They will enter into a court enforceable agreement with the Chicago Police Department. Ooh, that's scary. You mean you're going to enter into an agreement, a court-enforceable agreement? Well, that should really solve things. That's an innovative approach, wouldn't you say? That's courageous. Oh, yes. That's visionary. Considering so far, these court enforceable agreements have been entered into with other police departments. It hasn't stopped police killings. It hasn't stopped rogue cops. It hasn't stopped rogue prosecutors. It hasn't stopped rogue judges. It hasn't stopped the abuse of the grand jury system. It hasn't stopped any of this. But you're going to now enter into an agreement. You're not punishing. Nobody's to be punished. You notice this. She's not saying we are definitely going after prosecuting. This is a former prosecutor now talking. This is her field. Investigating in order to prosecute. And she says absolutely nothing about potential, not even potential prosecutions. So don't expect any of this. Don't expect any of this. It's not going to happen. So there we are. And this is what I come back to all the time. Supposedly, these folks have a political life and a political lifespan because the communities from which they come, whether directly or indirectly, support them, fiercely support them. whether it is out of a sense of racial pride, or whether even people have lost their minds and lost direction or developed some kind of amnesia that allows them to dislodge themselves from reality, whatever the deal is, these people are put in places where they can make a major difference. Barack Obama is a prime example. Do you think he just got there because, well, he's that good? No. He got there because people put him there. And the people who put him there because of a yearning for different kinds of leadership. And for redress of historic wrongs. Basic, a basic need. And they have a right to expect a reasonable return on that investment. They haven't gotten it, and they still are not getting it. And they put the guy at the top office, all right? They put him in the White House, not even once. They did it twice. Brought him political victory. They had a heavy investment in his being there. You have Eric Holder. Eric Holder is now U.S. Attorney General, first African-American, and everybody gets delirious. Oh, a change is going to come. All right. Well, it didn't, did it? Lots of fancy footwork, lots of talk, lots of this, lots of that. But in the end, as he is leaving, going back to his well-paying job as a partner in a law firm, he leaves you a report. No action, just a report. Here, I compiled some numbers and I put it together and here you go, here's a report, make of it whatever you will. I'm outie, I'm done, I'm gone. And the problem that everybody's looking to him to do something about, and which he pledged openly to do something about, ends up the same way as what we heard yesterday. Oh, it's about systems. It's about systems. The system, we're going to recommend new ways of doing things. We're going to make the system more efficient in the way it abuses people's constitutional rights, and we are going to be triumphant about that. We are going to sound the sound of victory. We have achieved something here. We have done things that people should be happy and grateful for. The same people who, according to Ms. Lynch, the same people who are, quote, ignored, let down, mistreated, the people who have mistrust because of all that. This is all to say black people. She's not going to say that. And black people and Latinos, they're not going to say it that way. But those people who have mistrust, because, you know, they're very aware that in our apartheid society, there's a large community that doesn't have this problem of mistrust. The police do policing. They police. In other communities, however, they do enforcement. They don't do policing. And this is not new. I'm not telling you anything new. This is known. But we have two African-American attorneys general one right after the other, in sequence. There's no interruption. There's a straight line between the tenure of Eric Holder and the tenure of Loretta Lynch. There's no interruption. So this problem, this systemic problem of police use of force, police killings, rogue cops, and a rogue criminal justice system that permits these rogue cops to walk the streets with impunity. One would assume that Eric Holder would have handed Loretta Lynch the biggest dossier ever on police departments to watch. This is how far we got. This is what we did. This is who went to jail. This is who we prosecuted. This is who we found guilty. These are the prosecutors who we found abusing the system or underperforming spectacularly. And you need to get them out. Oh, no such thing. No such thing. Party loyalty comes first. Personal agendas come first. The whole idea of the true bosses. The true bosses are not the people. Their true bosses look nothing like the people who are being slaughtered in the streets. And psychologically, they're no longer on the plantation. They've left the plantation. Although, of course, we know that's not true. They're still on the plantation, but it pays better. They can drive better cars. They can live in gated communities and send their children to private school. They can appear once a year to gatherings in honor of Martin Luther King, and they can, if they remember, sing We Shall Overcome, a verse or two. Their people outside are saying, we are overcome. Inside singing, we shall overcome. That is the distortion, and that is the distance between these folks who have been elected or in other ways with the support of these communities looking. And is that a big thing? People are demanding the impossible. The demands are quite possible to fulfill. Very, very easily done because they have the authority to do it. And they will have the support to do it. And above everything else, it's not a favor. This is your job. This is what the job is. Go out there and do some justice, for crying out loud. And that's what people want. So, it brings me back to this theme I often come to, which is the need. The imperative need to absolutely punish the Democratic Party. Absolutely punish them. They are ungrateful. They don't deserve your support. And more than anything else, you should now look upon the Democratic Party as a major impediment to your prosperity, and even your life itself. All of these things have been happening for years, yes, but we have had, supposedly, the political reinforcement that allowed people to enter into spheres of influence and authority like never before. These are Democrats. These are Democrats that your preachers come and tell you to vote for. Your community is being slaughtered. And they're still singing this nonsense about, you know, well, you got to vote. No, you don't vote. You punish this party. You break it up. You smash it to smithereens. That's what you're supposed to do. and don't even blink an eye about it. This party has been extraordinarily stubborn. It is, of course, the party of the slavocracy of the South. That's where it originated. And we see through the course of history, particularly recent history, we see how consistent this party has been in ignoring the problems of the masses of people who have every election cycle pledged their allegiance to it. And they put in office people who are not at all on their side. They betray them. They betray them. And still, you have a strange case of amnesia or some kind of mental issue where you feel the need to even disgrace and punish yourself. You keep these people in office, and you even sometimes defend them. They have no problems betraying you and your interests. And these days, our interests coincide with life itself, our communities being killed, inside and from outside agents. But this matter of police brutality has to be dealt with. And since Sister Lynch is a person dedicated to systems, I again remind you of the need to develop a system of punishment. Punish this party. That's how you teach them a lesson. That's how you teach it a lesson. You punish it severely. Even to the point of saying, I don't care whether this party exists or doesn't exist. I have no vested interest in its continued existence because it clearly has no interest at all in mine. That's the attitude we ought to have. I find it regrettable. I find it sad. And I find it actually outrageous that at this juncture in our collective history, we have people so brazen now who come like sheep in wolf's clothing, or the other way around, wolves like wolves in sheep's clothing. Either way, they're not the bearers of the news that you think they ought to be presenting to you. And they have now a resolute attitude. I am going to tell you to your face, your troubles are not necessarily mine. I am here to deal with the system, the administrative side of things. Although I certainly have the power and authority as U.S. Attorney General to put the whole damn thing under the microscope. And let's really get to the nitty-gritty here and cause some changes to be made. I've often said of myself, if I have a job with any degree of authority, if I last only 5 minutes in that capacity, you will know it. Because I'm going to go for broke with the authority vested in me. I'm not going to be kowtowing and afraid to make a decision. Especially a decision that is fair, that has been yearned for, that has been asked for, and that is clearly needed. It's not about me. Not about me. We don't see ourselves any longer as part of the continuum of struggle. We've divorced ourselves from that. We have no responsibility, most of us think, to take up some portion of the weight of the yoke. That's the job. So I monitored the media coverage, and they gave U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch her day in the sun. Very, very forward-thinking person who aims to create change. I agree. She will create change. But for whom? Thanks for joining me today, and thanks for allowing me to stretch out a little bit and say a little thing or two that's on my mind. Stay tuned. Keep it right here on PRN.FM. Coming up next, Infectious Myth with David Crow. You can always drop me a line. I delight in hearing from you at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you're thinking about these programs, about what I'm saying, and also what you have to say. Always a pleasure and a great privilege. I mean that from my heart, to be in your company Monday through Friday right here on PRN.FM. And before I go, I just want to thank so many of you for the caring and the good messages that you share of a concern for my health. I thank you so much for that energy. I lean on it every day to pull me through. And I hope that these tirades of mine in some way is a kind of a payback that I'm feeling okay. I'm feeling good. So I thank you very much for your concern. And I thank those of you who have started the Lead Stories study groups all over the country, all over the world. I'm getting messages from points way beyond our borders saying that they have started the Lead Stories study group, which is people just on an informal basis arranging with friends and others in their circle. And they listen to the program, they listen to other programs on PRN, and they have a chat. And however they choose to organize it is fine. The idea is that they are communicating and helping to promote this program, which I sincerely appreciate, and helping to promote the station, which I also sincerely appreciate. So thank you again for that compliment. I thank you so much for thinking so highly of the program. We'll see each other tomorrow. Again, thanks so much for being with me today. Bye-bye.